Welcome to CFTV Live. I'm Jared Stansberry. CFTV Live is brought to you every single week by our friends over at Agrigold. They know corn. You can look them up online at agrigold.com, and you can learn all kinds of good stuff on there about their products and their farming techniques. What's up, Jeff Woody? This is take two.
I don't think there's any question of people understanding if this is live or not.
Yeah.
Because this is...
Every single week we mess up.
We've had some kind of technical difficulty, whether it sounds like somebody's got a harmonica into the microphone or whether we have to restart it. Something happens.
Yeah, you guys can blame me. I'll be the whipping boy.
I always do.
That's fine.
I always do.
Yeah. No, we're all good
so
there.
So you're actually going to accept the blame?
I'll accept the blame, guys. You know, I'm a team player, and I'm here to make you two look good.
Gray's all grown up.
I'll do whatever I can to make you two look good.
Gray's all grown up.
Wow, I'm kind of shook right now because I did not anticipate that at all.
You know, that's the attitude of a good offensive lineman, Gray.
Guys, I'm in a happy mood right now, right? Iowa State basketball's 2-0. Football team got a big W. I don't care what you guys say about me. I'm happy.
I think that we could probably test those limits pretty quickly. Iowa State gets the win over Kansas on Saturday. We were getting into this, but it seemed for a second like Iowa State wasn't going to get there.
Yeah, so the column that I wrote for the Register, the observations that I had, a lot of that's carryover to this program and from this program to there because it's the main points of whatever the game that I saw from the game. And one of the main points is, you know, the old expression, it's better to be lucky than good sometimes. Mm-hmm. Well, it's best to be both, to be lucky and good. But when in the first half, Iowa State was lucky to be down 7 points because they, like I was saying before we got cut off, Kansas missed a field goal. They muffed a punt inside their own 10, which gave Iowa State the ball back. So you can take 3 points off Iowa State's and give 3 points to Kansas. That automatically puts you at, I believe, 17 to 7 or 20-7.
Yeah.
And then you can, when they quick kicked for God knows why on the 39 with their quarterback after coming out of a timeout and coming into an offensive set, they kicked through the end zone.
In that situation, I just don't get why. Like, what's the point of that? Because you could just run your punter out there and do the same exact thing.
What I'm guessing they had, because you saw him back up. Uh-huh. So what I'm guessing they had is they had an offensive play called and a check to see if there's a certain look, we can't be successful in the play that we're going to run. So you're going to quick kick it.
Yeah.
So I'm going to guess what it was is they're going to probably run a tailback run to the heavy side because they were a down tight end and an off tight end to the right side of the formation, and they had a wing on the backside, so they're probably running to the heavy side of the formation with the running back. And a lot of times, depending on the angle of the play, if you have a certain defensive line technique, uh-huh. the blocking scheme won't end up, it won't line up. So if I'm assuming what happened is he said, you know, if they come out lined up with shade 3-5, we're good to go. If they come out with a double eagle or a true nose, a 4-eye or a 4-technique and a 9-technique, we can't run this. So they came out in the one where we couldn't run it, or they couldn't run it, and they decided to quick kick. Now, here's one thing. So I'm wearing this Roosevelt shirt. So I coach special teams at Roosevelt.
Yeah.
And one of the things that the coach and I agree upon is, here's the thing. That is a net 19-yard punt.
Yeah.
19 yards. The difference, you know, you talk about that coach that never punts down in Arkansas, the one that always onside kicks, goes for two, and never punts. He did a mathematical breakdown, and this is different for high school than in college, but Tom Herman did the same thing for when we were at Iowa State. The difference between scoring a touchdown between starting on the 39 and starting on the 20 is about, if I remember correctly, is about 3% difference. So when you're going to punt that, there's no if you get stopped, you get tackled for a 3-yard loss, big deal. I've never understood punting inside of the 45 or inside of the 40 unless it's like 4th and 35.
Jeff, I got a question for you. As a player perspective, when you were playing for Rhodes and he would punt the ball there, is a part of the offense all of a sudden kind of deflated a little bit? Like, hey, the coach doesn't believe that we can go pick up 2 yards here. Is there a little bit of that that comes – or are you pissed?
It's less deflated. It's more pissed.
Pissed, yeah.
Because, I mean, it's sort of the same thing of you know, again, the basketball equivalent is you get one foul and they take you out of the game and you're like, what? Like, come on. Like, that's not the accurate assessment of what's going on here. So you're sitting on the bench. You're not like deflated, like, oh man, I can't play anymore. You're like, man, this is stupid. Why am I here? Why did we do that? So that's the correlation is when you're taken out after one foul with 16 minutes to play in the first half.
I think it says a lot about Iowa State's team that they were able to fall behind that way, and then they were able to battle back.
Yeah.
You know, like a team that's still pretty young, they're still working to learn how to win games, and they're able to win in that fashion.
That was what was impressive. So they were lucky in the first half, and they were really good in the second half. Yeah. I mean, they were the first quarter was about as bad as you could have played against Kansas and still been in the game. And the second half, they went out in the second half and deserved to win the football game. Uh-huh. I mean, Montgomery, the way they were blocking for Montgomery and the way he was setting up what he was running, which we're going to show a couple runs, a run for Montgomery, and the way Park was playing, Jacob Park was 20 of 26 passing, yeah. And probably three of those incompletions were drops.
Yeah.
And so you get 20, essentially, by de facto, 23 out of 26 passing with two touchdowns. And I'll forgive the interception because that was off of Allen in the first half. Or excuse me, that was a Park pass, right?
Yeah, it went through Allen's.
Yeah, head. So yeah. That was the interception wasn't his fault either. So all of between Park and Montgomery and Mitchell Harger, they worked their way back to deserve to win the game, and that was really encouraging to me. Regardless of the opponent, is that. Again, with as poorly as they played in the first half, they could have very easily folded the tent and been like, man, this is dumb. This is we screwed our way out of this win. But they didn't, and they stayed up and responded and actually came back to win the game.
Speaking of Mitchell Harger, you know, we've talked all season long about how they don't have that much leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden you get a guy like Mitchell Harger who mm-hmm. has – I think he had 8 carries in his whole career going mm-hmm. into that drive. And, you know, that – it's – it's like they have the leadership, but it's kind of unorthodox compared to mm-hmm. a lot of other teams.
Well, and so again, there's the three things of there's leaders, there's followers, and this is a Rhodes phrase. There's leaders, followers, and assholes, and you can win with the first two. Well, leadership doesn't necessarily – being in a good position with a team doesn't necessarily mean you have a bunch of leaders or a bunch of followers, there has to be a group of guys that are in both. So like at certain situations, you have to have guys that are going to step from follower to leader. And guys like Jacob Park and guys like Alan Lazard's always been a leader, but guys like Mitchell Harger are going to float between the two, uh-huh. where you're not going to be a detriment to the team, and sometimes you're going to have to be the engine that pushes it rather than just the hitch behind that you're getting pulled. So for Harger, that was a good time for him as a guy who's respected in the locker room by his work ethic and attitude to finally show like, hey, this is what you need to be doing. This is what I'm doing. And we'll actually break down his touchdown. That wasn't just a fluke. That wasn't like we're handing it to him just because.
Yeah.
He did an excellent job in setting up his blocks. He doesn't have the quickness that Dave Montgomery or Mike Warren does, but he has the understanding of football to make it actually happen. So while we're here, we're actually going to transition. I think it's a pretty good time to go up to the screen. Bring up Harg's touchdown. So Mitchell Harger is Auburnette's finest.
You played with him, didn't you?
I did. Yep. For two years he was there. He was a scout team running back, just as I was. So go ahead and reset this from the start. So one of the things that you're going to see, so this is a third and goal. This is just after they got, an illegal shift or something like that. They were third.
Well, they had a play where I was actually going to ask you about this. The tight ends were set up on one side, and then Hakeem Butler was set up on the bottom. And Alan Lazard looked at him like, why aren't you going in motion? And then the tight ends went in motion, and then he went in motion. And it was like they had no idea what was supposed to be happening. Is there like a certain sequence to that so that then like he was waiting for the tight ends to move?
Generally speaking, if there's a tight end – so there's a difference between a shift and a motion, because a shift changes the formation entirely.
Uh-huh.
A motion changes one person. So a shift, when you move a tight end from on the ball to on the ball, that changes the front that the defense has to respond to. So that's a shift. When you're moving two tight ends at the same time, a formation shift has to happen before the motion happens. Because the reason why you do that is because you need to see what the core defense is going to be. So with a shift, the reason why you would do a shift. So if you're lined up and you have a tight end on this side and you have a shade, which we talked about in defensive line techniques. You have a shade on the backside, a 3 on the front side, and a 9 outside the tight end. And then you move that back to the other side. You can see where the linebackers move, and you can also see if they're going to readjust to what you're going to get. So if you have a strong side on the front side with a 3 and a 9, and you move them back over there, if you can get them to stay in that shade rather than having them bump back out, you give yourself better angles. So you get you can see exactly what the front is going to be. And then the reason why you do a motion is because if you're playing man-to-man coverage, they're going to have to follow that guy across. If they're playing zone, then they're going to stay on that side because they're responsible for an area. So if you do a shift and then a motion, you can see this is exactly the front they're running. This is exactly the coverage they're running, so you have a better idea of what's going on. So that's the reason why you'd shift in motion. And generally speaking, you shift and then motion, and that's assuming the penalty was.
For sure.
But back to Mitch Harger. So one of the things that, as a running back, the thing that I love doing is you control the linebackers. When you do this right, when you do running back right, you have to use what they're doing against them. So as a linebacker, there's three down and they have a bunch of clustered guys. So there's one of these guys is a safety, I believe it's right here, and this is going to be a guy that's going in motion with Deshante Jones. So a corner or a nickel. So everybody else, there's no one back here. So the entire box is kind of this clustered thing here. So within this unit of seven guys, they got to be responsible for these 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, depending on where the tight end goes, they have to be, those seven guys have to be responsible for six gaps and then whatever comes outside. So those guys have to fit somewhere. So what they're doing is, as they see the flow of the play, the linemen move. And one of the things that you always see is step down, close down by a defensive lineman. So if an offensive lineman steps down this way, and I'm a defensive lineman, I have to close this space and follow it because this is the gap that I'm responsible for.
Uh-huh.
So linebackers have to do the same thing, just a different version because you're not right up next to each other. As the gap moves, you have to travel with the gap. So if I'm naturally headed this way, and as a running back, I know you're already headed this way, I'm going to keep you moving this way until I absolutely have to step back or cut back, and I'm going to go right behind you. So what I'm going to set up is give my blocker leverage to get you outside and cut right off of it. That sounds really easy to do, but when you see a hole, when it's like this, if I see a hole here, but imagine the doorway that you're trying to walk through is moving like that.
Yeah.
So if you see that it's open right now, somebody behind them is going to be flowing too. So if you cut up immediately, you cut up too soon, the guy that you're trying to avoid is hitting you right from right behind. So you have to set up your block to get that guy to commit into this kind of clump of trash, and then you cut behind him. So now Mitchell Harger. So we're going to watch this one time and watch this backside linebacker. I think it's this guy here. So go ahead and hit play. So this backside linebacker here, and I'll freeze it once I need to. So freeze. So from here, Mitch Harger is running in this direction. This guy has to match. So he's got to stay in this gap. This is his job. He's got to stay here. So what Mitch Harger's doing is he sees, I'm blocked. This guy is going to get caught up in the trash if I do my job right, because I'm going to move everything into him. So the only guy that I really have to worry about is this one backside. He's got a guy assigned to him. So go ahead and play for one more second and freeze it. Freeze. So he's got this guy and this guy moving this direction. He's still not fully committed down the field. He's going this way. So he's still getting this linebacker to stretch and stretch and stretch and stretch. Let's go ahead and play. Freeze. You see that now that linebacker, what he did, the linebacker is too far over. He's got a body on him. Mitch cut right behind him. So go ahead and finish this play and see that that's the effect you get. So go ahead and watch it one more time in full speed. So watch him set up this block. That wasn't even a great, I think that was Sam Harms. That wasn't even a great block, but what Mitch did is set this guy so far forward and cut right behind him that there's no reason for him to actually have to make a great, you know, jump, diving cut, whatever it is. Uh-huh. Mitch Harger did a really good job of just doing a good job.
Adam's computer's going to die.
So we got to get this plugged in to avoid further technical difficulties.
Yeah. So I guess what is it that, you know, makes that different compared to what some of the other running backs have done for Iowa State this year? Or is it just like is it just that they're playing Kansas that made it successful, like more successful than it's been previously?
Yes, but kind of no. So the reason why it's more successful, and this is where a guy like Mike is struggling, because he has to understand who's taken care of. So Mitch's eyes, when he takes off, his eyes go straight to this guy, to this backside linebacker, because he knows who I have to account for myself and who everyone else is going to be accounted for. So it's sort of like when we're talking about a quarterback in the pocket. When a quarterback sets up, he had initially looked at the protection, and then once he knows what the protection is, he starts looking at coverage. So because he knows, all right, my tackle's blocking this guy, that defensive tackle's getting blocked by my guard, that defensive tackle's getting blocked by the center, and that defensive end's getting blocked by the backer or by my offensive tackle, that linebacker blitzing's going to get picked up by the running back. I'm protected. I don't have to concern myself with what's going on here, so I'm going to look this way. That's what a good quarterback does. When a quarterback gets happy feet, they stop seeing that and they start going, oh, shoot, who's blocking this guy? I have to look at him and I can't look at the coverage. Similarly, a running back, when they know the blocking scheme and they know who is going to be blocking whom, they know that this tackle, they're going to scoop for this. They're going to get these two guys for these two guys. They know these three guys are going to take care of these three guys. You know the tight end's going to take care of the front side. You know what's going on. So you don't have to concern yourself. Your eyes don't have to travel to a guy that's already occupied, and you can look at who you need to. So when you can look at who you need to, you can set up who you need to. Where Mike right now is thinking too much. He's looking at who's occupied and not letting himself set up who's not. So that's where familiarity, and as a redshirt senior, he's seen a lot of football. He's comfortable enough with himself that he understands the blocking scheme, and that's where good running backs do what they do. That's what if you watch Zeke Elliott, granted, the Cowboys offensive line's really good, yeah. So you can be sure that what you're sensing is right. But that's what Zeke Elliott does so well, is he anticipates where guys are going to be, forces them in there, and then cuts off of it. That's what really good running backs do.
As a fellow walk-on, how surreal of a moment is a play like this?
That's awesome. I also scored my first touchdown against Kansas. It was 2010, actually at home, and that was a game where James White, Chantrell Johnson, and I all scored a touchdown. It was James's first and my first. So
was that Chantrell Johnson's quick cut back
yes.
his freshman year?
Yep.
Whew.
That was dirty.
Yeah, that was
that
dirty.
That was dirty.
So I heard this a lot in the stands when I was there at the game, and I saw it a lot on Twitter. Mitch Harger is the next Jeff Woody. What do you have to say about that?
He's like 5'9",
200. 190 pounds.
He's 195 pounds.
Why do you think they compare you to?
Yeah. Oh, that's, sorry. Yeah. I'm just looking at my forearm, which is almost translucent. I couldn't come up with a reason why you'd compare Mitch Harger and I.
That's funny though. But So what I noticed there, I'm just speaking out of turn, I guess, but he was patient because he's smart, because he mm-hmm. knows he's not like a Mike Warren, where Mike Warren can outrun guys when he gets there. He's mm-hmm. got to sit behind, and he kind of like hides behind the line a little bit, because like you said, he is 5'9", so he can kind of just wait. And do you think the defense has trouble seeing a guy like him?
No, because the thing is, as a defense, it doesn't matter what they're doing back there, because there are certain guys that are assigned to a quarterback. Like they're leaving. Go ahead and play this for a second.
Sure.
Let me spin around the wrong way. So they're leaving this guy unblocked. Freeze. So this guy is whatever comes to my side first. So if they run this as like a counter and they take the running back, this guy's got the running back. So this guy has whoever comes out to that side. Conversely, this guy has whoever comes out to this side. Everybody else has a gap. So it doesn't matter who's got the ball. I'm going to be responsible if between the center and the guard. I'm going to sit right here, and if the ball comes to me, I'm tackling the ball. So I have a gap. So they're not really – if you're looking in the backfield – you're pretty much screwed as a linebacker, because if you're looking in the backfield and you see a really good play action, you're going to bite forward. So you're looking at your key. You're looking at a guard. You see a guard that has a run action, I'm going to fit, run. If I see a guard, they call it high hat. So if the guard comes out of his stance and pops up like this, it means pass. So I'm not looking in the backfield. I'm looking at my gap. I'm looking at what exactly is or what's going on, where I have to fit. So the hiding behind your line thing doesn't make a lot of difference. It's how you set up where you're going to cut off of. So we'll go to while we're talking about it, we'll go to Montgomery's run too, because that was another – I'm so happy that we finally get to talk about running backs doing good stuff for Iowa State, because that's kind of my wheelhouse, is what running backs do rather than what everybody else does. So is this go back at all a little farther?
Nope.
Or is this where it starts?
That's where it starts.
That's fine. So this is you'll notice that Kansas in the last play had three down. This is a four down look. So this is a second and one. It's a tighter formation. They're playing three over two on the outside with 1-2-3 over 1-2. And they're playing man to man in the backfield. We have a tight end and we have a running back. So it's a pretty balanced look. There's not a lot of, no one really has an advantage from a personnel standpoint. But one thing that you're going to notice is the center and the guard are going to have these two guys. So by the way they're aligned, the defensive tackle is on the outside shoulder of the guard. Well, if I'm responsible as the center and I'm over here and my defensive lineman that I'm supposed to be comboing for is on this side, that's a really difficult combination block. So there's no way I can help on this, and the only thing I could do is push it way by and then hope to get up on the linebacker. But the play is designed to hit out here. So it's not – that can't happen. So what has to happen is the guard says to the center, all right, the guy that's sitting right here, I'm going to take him over, and in order for us to be responsible for these two, in order for both of us to get these guys, the most direct path, because that linebacker is going to commit outside, the only way that I'm going to get that both of us are going to get to this guy is I seal this off and you're going to kind of do a quick pull around me to cut this guy off at the pass. So the guard stymies this defensive tackle. The center has a quick pull around to pick up the linebacker, and you have the exact same wall you would if you were playing if that defensive lineman is playing a combination or an easy combination block inside. So they're man-to-man here. They're going to pin and pull to this guy, and these backside linebackers are going to scoop. The tight end is going to push out. We're going to have a man-to-man here, but the tight end's going to come up and take whatever the force player is. So go ahead and play this for a little bit, and I'll freeze it too. So watch this action here. So it's pin and pull by the center. Freeze. So again, Montgomery is pushing this way. It's a little hard to see because of the blue-on-blue blur, but this is a linebacker that come from this position. We're in the exact same spot that Mitch Harger was before. This guy knows he has to fit here, and this guy is going to have to fit here. So I got to trust my buddy as a linebacker that they're going to fit their gap, and I got to fit mine. So what Montgomery does is forces this guy outside the center. The center kicks him out and cuts right underneath him. So play a little farther, freeze. So you'll see that linebacker was the one that he wanted to set up to get him pushed by. Chandler is going to be on the safety. This force player gets him pushed by. And this is what Montgomery does that someone like Mitch Harger or myself can't do very well at the college level, is these guys weren't really blocked. You're supposed to try and scoop them. And when I say scoop, it means if there's a guy here, I'm going to try and get underneath him and just hinder his ability to get to the front side. Mm-hmm. So neither of these guys is really blocked. And this is where David Montgomery's special and good running backs like Mike has the same capability, is when you put your foot in the ground and you take off, that the angle that they thought they were going to get you with doesn't happen. So play it a little farther, and then we're going to watch this one more time full speed. This is just, that's a dude being a dude. That's a guy having physical tools and having talent, but not just relying on talent to get it done. Because at the line of scrimmage, so again, watch this and watch this linebacker and watch this linebacker. Watch what they're supposed to do. They're trying to get front side. He cuts right behind him. So go ahead and play.
This backside safety made a great play to be able to keep him from scoring a touchdown.
That guy here?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a hell of an effort.
Yeah.
By that Kansas player.
I mean, he
player.
Ran clear across the field.
Mm-hmm. I think that was actually the nickel.
Yeah.
So even outside of that.
Because he was way back. He was way back.
Yeah, that guy's here.
Yeah.
So that was fun, good defense.
Yeah, definitely.
So we'll do one more offense, and then we'll get to that last Wilts interception. So the first one we're going to go – the next one we're going to go to is talking about the kind of the three-headed passing attack or three-headed passing monster that Kansas – or that Iowa State played against Kansas, which was DeShante Jones, Allen Lazard, and Jacob Park. I think Allen had 10 receptions, DeShante had 5, and Jacob Park had 20 completions. So 75% of the completed passes from Jacob Park went to the hands of number 8 or number 5. So here's one of the things that I'm super happy with, that we now have the capacity to do this. So this is DeShante Jones, this is Allen Lazard. What you're going to see is there's a lot of guys here and there's nobody back here. So there's no high safeties. Pop quiz, what's the coverage?
Cover zero.
So what that means is all of these guys are going to be playing some version of either a spy or they're going to be blitzing. There's nobody here that's going to bail back right now, because at the goal line, there's not enough space for somebody to bail in time. If they do, they're wrong. So if they're in this position and they're going to try and bail back, this guy would be the one that would do it, is out of position right now. So regardless of if they're trying to not play cover zero, this turns into cover zero. So that means if you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 eligible receivers, 11 minus 5 is 6. Means 6 guys are blitzing. We can't pick them up. So this pass has to be fast. One of the things that you also might see out of this look, this could be a decoy look. So it may not be a deep coverage, but what they might do is we call it cover seven. When you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and then you have another one in 7 that essentially plays zones across the board. So you might have a version of cover 7 or you might have a version of cover 0 based on this look. So the route concept that was performed by Iowa State was one that I absolutely love, especially in this situation. So what's going to happen is DeShonte Jones is going to run a quick out and up, and Al Mazzard is going to run basically, it's not a vertical, he's going to run an angled route. So it's not a post, it's a direct route. Right now he's going to run to the basically the outside upright. He's going to run this way. The reason why I love this concept is because if it's man-to-man coverage, by Allen running right through to this upright, he's going to take this guy with him. There's no way not for that, or for this guy at his depth right now, there's no way for him not to get hung up in the trash if they're playing man. If they're playing zone, in order for this to happen properly, you got to have like Darrell Revis and Cam Chancellor playing corner in order to pass this off. Because if he's running here and DeShonte Jones is running out, they're going to have to come together and trade as soon as that exchange happens, which is really hard to do, and you have to involve a lot of trust. So if you're running against man, most likely this guy's going to sit for a second with Jones and Lazard's open for just a dart right behind him. If it's man, this guy's going to run with Allen, get this guy hung up in the process, and you have an open route to DeShonte Jones. So it's a really easy read for Park, because one, that pass is this. Either way, that's the timing of it, because it's not something that has to take a long time, because by the time that ball gets out there, that's what, 2 seconds? Or if I'm going to throw a dart to Lazard, it's the same thing. It's catch, throw. So all he has to look at is, as he goes to set, is that guy in man? Is that guy in zone? If I know that he's in man, I'm throwing it to DeShonte. If he's in a zone, I'm going to throw a bullet to Lazard. Yep. All it is catch, read, throw. It's simple. That's the thing that they've done with Park, is they've simplified a lot of what he's doing and allows his arm talent to go. So go ahead and hit play for a second, and we'll freeze it at the exchange. So freeze. So you see that this is man coverage. You see that this guy for Kansas, there's no good way for him to get here, because if he were to try and go underneath this, he's going to be right here. DeShonte Jones catches it in rhythm, catches it, turns it up, and runs uncontested to the end zone. If, like what happens here, he tries to go over top of that, he's giving a lot of space to DeShonte Jones. So this is a really easy play. Go ahead and rewind this back. Now that you've seen at least the start of the route, watch the rhythm that Park has on this throw. So it's catch, 1, 2, 3, turn, throw. It's quick, it's fast, there's not a lot of reading involved. And this, I'll take this battle 10 times out of 10. With DeShonte Jones in space against a guy in the secondary standing on the 2-yard line. This is a really easy concept. And the thing that I'm so excited for is, what are you going to do if you're Kansas? Are you going to leave Allen Lazard man-to-man with a freshman corner?
Yeah.
Or are you going to leave DeShonte Jones man-to-man with a nickel linebacker or a nickel defender? There's no good way to defend a play like this and an attack like this unless you can effectively pass everything off in a zone really, really quick.
How different is this compared to what Iowa State did previously and then even early in the season?
Well, they just didn't execute it at the level they needed to. So something like this, go ahead and rewind it to about here. So something that would have happened early in the season is, if you're looking at, so again, to use a basketball analogy, I don't know what the kind of the signal is for an entry pass into the post, but if I would assume it's if you see both numbers and there's no defender that's kind of giving any type of corner, and you're going to give your guy's bodied up. Well, Allen Lazard at this point is bodied up. This isn't a bad option to throw. But if you're so locked in on throwing to one guy, if you know that you're going to throw this slant to Allen, then you're going to try and bury this into his stomach, and this corner has a capacity to make a play. So a lot of times what Joel would do is he knows he's got to – I mean, still, Allen catches this ball probably 6 times out of 10 if you throw it to him.
Yeah.
But what he's going to throw it to him is try and keep it away from this defender, keep it away from him, so he's going to probably throw it up and away to keep it away from the secondary, which a lot of times would run incomplete. So now that DeShonte Jones is a viable second option, you don't have to worry about just forcing the ball to number 5. You can get it to number 8, and he's good. He's good enough to take care of what he's going to do. So now that we're done talking about offense, because there's a lot of good stuff on offense, we'll pull up the Jamal Wiltz play. Because when I watch football, even Iowa State, Like, good football makes me happy. Bad football makes me a little bit frustrated. This is a horrible play call from Kansas. I don't know if there's a bust, if somebody didn't run a release on a route, if somebody didn't release fast enough. But there's no, this is a horrible play design and horrible execution, and Iowa State capitalizes on it by playing really good defense. So this is the Jamal Wiltz interception. Wiltz is playing down here. So what this route concept is you're going to have a release, a vertical release here. You'll have a vertical release here, and you're going to have a tight end that's going to run what's called a climb route, or what's going to be kind of a deep over. It's not a sharp route. It's going to run a deep over back here. Okay. That's all cool. Problem. Safety, safety, linebacker, 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 corner. We have more guys than you have as possible pass catchers. We have six to your three. So you're going to release outside. If there's nothing holding me tight to the middle, my corner can just force you wide. My nickel can play sort of a kind of an over-the-top defense here on top of this tight end because all of these guys are playing underneath coverage on this tight end. So I can play him over the top. I can play these linebackers underneath. So this guy's taken care of. My safety, knowing that this is taken care of where he's bracketed, my safety can cheat to the top. So you have double coverage here. And then on the bottom side, you've got, again, another player that can force anything inside. And you're already got a pretty bad release here. So the only way to make this play work is if they're going to give you a deep coverage, which is an off and outside technique, meaning he's off coverage and he's lined up. You see how he's outside the hash and this guy's inside the hash? It's an outside technique. So he's playing off and out. The way that you can take advantage of that is right here. But that means these guys have to be far enough forward that you can get that ball in. So what does that mean for you? You have to run a route that's underneath here that forces linebackers to close up on whatever route's there. So go ahead and hit play and let me know if you see anything show up underneath. Freeze. This is 4 yards behind the line of scrimmage as a safety valve. You have a tight end that's running underneath. These linebackers are, these two are at 7 yards, and you have two more that are playing at least 9. There's nothing to hold them up front. It's 2nd and 8. Like, you don't need a touchdown here. Yeah. This is a horrible play call because all you have to do is release a tight end right here, and there is no one that's going to slow him down. So this is a bad play call. So bad play call by Kansas. But restart this from take this back to the jump. So Wiltz here is on the bottom, and he's man-to-man coverage with the Kansas wide receiver. And one of the things we talked about is what's called that 4-yard highway, right? Where you want to give, as a wide receiver, you want to give 4 yards between you and the sideline so the quarterback can throw you away. So that's when Park threw that stupid interception to, I believe it was Kansas State. Yeah. He threw it inside rather than outside.
You need to get over that, by the way.
I still can't. So you want to throw them outside. So you have to give your quarterback an area somewhere outside. And as a corner, I want to eat into that space as much as I can because then I've got the inside and my buddy, the sideline, has the other side. So I'm going to force you and try and pin you to the sideline as much as you can. If you guys saw this live, Wiltz played a great coverage enough where he turned and just kind of – it wasn't pushed. He wasn't using his hands. He was using his body, again, like a power forward would, of just bodying him back to the point where that receiver was out of bounds. There was no area for the quarterback to throw. So you have double coverage, out of bounds. Good luck, guys.
And then the quarterback just kind of threw it up in the air.
The quarterback threw it because it's 2nd and 8. He has no other option, and he's a true freshman.
Yeah.
So, again, the next best option for this is it's 2nd and 8. 2:16, you need a touchdown. You have, I believe, no timeouts left. This is where you start to panic a little bit. If you're unfamiliar with the situation, that's a ton of time.
Yeah.
You're on the minus 24. That's a ton of time. Even if you get sacked or tackled here, that rolls off 20 seconds off the clock. You've still got, what, 1:46 left to play? There is so much time for you to do something with it that you don't have to worry about forcing this throw in. So go ahead and hit play now just for another second. So he's looking to this side. You got double coverage. We're having the guys fill underneath. You're going to have safety and another corner playing up here. Wants to throw it this way. Not going to happen. So he's looking that way. Shoot. Doesn't happen. So go ahead and play. So his eyes are facing that way. Flip. Freeze. So his eyes come back this way. He just assumes that this guy's going to be around. He's right here. He gets hit as he throws, but that. This is the Cardale Jones. Again, the analogy we use is when Cardale Jones got put in for Ohio State, he had a 1-2 run read. So he went 1-2. These are those options are bad. Run. So your next option isn't heave it to a covered receiver.
Yeah.
It's covered, covered, run. And that's what he didn't do. It's a bad decision by Kansas. It's horrible play design and really good defense by Iowa State.
So my question to that, Jeff, is it as much a bad play design as it is a freshman in his first start kind of melting down at the end? Because I look right there, I see 24 of the running back wide open in the flats. He's got one guy to beat for the first down. An experienced quarterback that's played a lot just knows these guys aren't open, these guys aren't open, I'm dumping it off here.
So an experienced quarterback, no one's really probably coming down to this guy. But what's an experienced quarterback is going to do is he's going to throw this into the fourth row of the bleachers. And he's going to take this, and as this guy is running out of bounds, or he gets pushed out of bounds, and I know that he's covered, rather than trying to force and think that it's going to be a completion, second down, burn it, throw it into the stands over that guy's head so it's not an intentional grounding, and nobody catches it. And it's essentially like a long spike. And you live to play another down.
So why would he not dump it off to the running back here, though?
Replay this to about right here. His eyes aren't towards him right now. The time he wants to throw, he's going to flip his hips, and by that time, boom, Justin Thomas is hitting him in the face. Yeah. So he doesn't have time to get down to a check down as he does to throw the ball away. So he's at this point, he goes, shoot, that 6'6", 290-pound dude's just about to hit me in the mouth. I have to get rid of this ball. So he's not thinking check down because there's no way for him to get this ball there. There's no window. So he's got to – this thing has to sail four rows into the stands. So – lots of good stuff happened for Iowa State, and lots of smart stuff happened for Iowa State. But they were lucky to be in the game at halftime.
Right.
But once they stayed in the game, they did things well, which is really nice to see.
What'd you think of Kansas's kick return that they ran?
So fun story about that. So I played Kansas four times, and I was a scout for them one time, so I was paying attention to them as they did it. At least two of those games, they tried that. So I'm on kickoff coverage all of my 4 years, and they try that stupid crap. And there you go. Hey, there's Matt. So I'm talking down the line. There's a guy laying down over there. There's somebody in the end zone. And then the Kansas sideline goes like this, and the guy just stands up. I'm like, shoot, you figured us out. Because honestly, he was camouflaged, but from a distance, like, you can see a lump in the end zone. Like, it's not.
The coaches knew. They were yelling to the players in the field.
Yeah, it's not hard.
Yeah.
You just have to look down the field and know that that's a thing that Kansas likes to do. The other thing that I thought
The funny thing is that that's even across coaches. Like, if they were doing it when you were doing it.
Yeah, no, it's.
That's just the Kansas thing.
It's been a thing. What's funny is that they'll try this with different guys, different positions on the field. Like, they'll have two returners back, and then they'll have a guy that, like, checks in because you have to come inside the numbers to be eligible. So he'll walk inside the numbers, and then he'll basically, like, he'll be the second guy for it, and he'll, like, lie on the sideline. And then you're still just like, I can see you. Stand up. I can see you. But the other funny thing about that is if you're going to try something like that, like if you're going to try a reverse pass or a lateral or something like that, you get basically one shot at that a year.
Yeah.
Because once it's on film, there's no element of surprise. So when you're going after something like that, you have one shot. And you want to make that shot big.
Yeah.
You want to get it to the 50, the 40, make it a touchdown. They got to the 35, which is like – that's a nice return.
I just thought it was funny how it blew up. And it's like, well, I mean, they only took it like – 15 yards.
36-yard line.
Yeah, I don't know why it's that big a deal.
It's a neat return. Good for you guys.
Why are you looking at me like that?
No, I'm smiling. I found it to be a funny play. And
you see him sticking his tongue out? That was weird. Weirdo.
He's like a lizard. He's trying to smell the fear.
Question from me. Iowa State's only a 3-point underdog against Texas Tech. Does that surprise you?
No.
No.
Texas Tech has lost five of their last six. Yes, they've all been really close, but they also have the 124th ranked defense in the country, giving up 42 points a game.
They have like the best passing offense in the Big 12 and then the worst pass rush and total defense.
Yeah, they're going to put up a lot of points. Like if Iowa State scores 41 points, they're scoring less than Texas Tech averages giving up. If Iowa State gives up 40 points, you're succeeding in holding Texas Tech to under their season average. You talk about stuff like that that bad miscommunication between DeShonte Jones and Alan Lazard, that route between the secondary, that stuff is like a dime a dozen against Texas Tech. The communication is awful. The tackling is awful. The form is awful. And it's going to be 45 degrees and windy on Saturday. So I'm not honestly in the least bit surprised. Now, Iowa State is going to have to score a lot to win this game because Pat Mahomes is as good as there is in the country. But they also the other thing is you can't give that more opportunities than you need to. So defense is just going to have to be serviceable. Hold them in the 30s and you win the game.
Yep.
I got another question. Texas Tech gives up 5.8 yards per carry.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think Joel Lanning gets more play at quarterback than we've seen the last two games? Don't think so?
Nope, because when you put Lanning in, you bring extra bodies into the box because he's less of a passing threat. When you have Jacob Park in, the safeties and the corners have to play back, meaning you have a more run-friendly box. So if you have Jacob Park in, like we showed in that Kansas player, they're playing 3-over-2, meaning 3 defensive players over 2 defensive players. That gives you a run advantage because you don't have one of those guys in the box. With a guy like Lanning, yes, he can throw the ball, but he's more primarily accustomed to running, so that means that they can play 2-over-2 and bring that guy into the box. So, yes, Joel runs better than Park does, but the offense probably runs the ball better when Lanning's not in the game because it gives them more run-friendly boxes because they got to defend the pass.
Counter-argument to that would be, we saw it in the goal line a couple times when they didn't put Lanning in, that defensive end was coming crashing down on those handoffs. Lanning's in the game, that defensive end can't crash. I mean, there's different ways to look at it, correct?
Yeah, there is.
So, I mean, the only thing I look at, I always go back to last year. Iowa State, Mike Warren ran for 10 yards per carry. Mm-hmm. That's absurd. 10 yards per carry. We still threw the ball 30-plus times, I think, in that game. Now, our defense was terrible, but we need to play keep away, so to speak, from Texas Tech's offense, right?
Mm-hmm.
You don't look at Joel Lanning as being the better option as far as the keep away. Okay.
Nope, because David Montgomery, Mike Warren, Mitch Harger, Kane Nwangu, those guys are going to be the ones averaging 10 yards a carry, not Joel Lanning.
Yeah.
So you want your running backs to run the ball. Now, do I think Joel's going to play a significant amount? Yes. I'm not saying he shouldn't. I think he absolutely should because there are certain packages where you get a huge advantage when Joel's on the field. But I think that Park still probably gets the lion's share of the snaps because of what he does to the defense by his accuracy and by his ability to throw into a really tight window, even if there may not be too many tight windows against Texas Tech.
I think this seems like a game where Iowa State's running backs could, like, really get going.
Yeah.
Like, I know last year, I think Mike ran for 245 yards against these guys.
On, like, 22 carries?
Yeah, and I don't think that – there's not going to be one guy that probably gets that many yards, but I wouldn't be at all surprised if you saw a couple get 100.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't. If Mike's healthy, this is a really good opportunity to get Mike back comfortable and back on track because even if you misread something – a lot of times there is going to be a hole there that's not supposed to be there because a guy either made a bad play or gambled a little bit too much on the defense. So this is a good opportunity to let the physical talent that he has overcome the mental frustration he's got by not fully understanding what everything's going to be done. Where a guy like Montgomery, a guy like Nwangu, that's going to be – I'm really – the thing that, honestly, above all things, I want to see, obviously, Iowa State win. And as a running back, I want to see him run for a lot of yards. But the person that I want to see do really well is Kane Nwangu. Because if there's a lot of holes, I think of guys in the open field, Kane Nwangu is the most dangerous open field runner that Iowa State has.
Uh-huh.
And if we can get him, again, to kind of – even without understanding what's going on, but seeing a big amount of open space, if you can get like, hey, Kane – go, like, play one-on-one with a safety and get that kid more confidence and get that kid more ability to play downhill. I would be really excited to see Kane have a big day on Saturday. I don't know if that's going to happen. I would hope that he gets some PT.
It's hard not to be excited when you see that reception he had where it should have been about a 3-yard gain. He turned it into 15, got us down about the 2 or 3-yard line.
That cat is explosive.
That was an impressive play. That's kind of where your eyes open and you say, man, this kid could be really good in a couple years sooner.
A true freshman.
Yeah. Weather, is it a factor for Texas Tech coming up from Texas? It's going to be windshield probably in the 30s with that wind.
Mm-hmm.
As a player, do you ever get the sense these Texas players hate getting hit in this weather?
I think of all the Texas schools, it affects Texas Tech the least because they're in the desert, so they have that those hot afternoons and really cool evenings, so they're accustomed to feeling some type of cold temperature. The wind might be a factor because how much they throw the ball around, but Pat Mahomes throws so much, such a tight spiral, and he has such a strong arm, he can cut it through the wind, so it's not going to be that big of a deal. I think the only thing that it may do is ideally, say Iowa State comes out and they put three quick touchdown drives on the board and get two turnovers, and Texas Tech is down 21-7. When it's colder, it's a lot easier to fold up the tent and go than it is to keep fighting when it's 71 degrees. So I think the only way that the weather has any type of effect is if it gets to the point where Iowa State looks to be in control of a game and Texas Tech stops fighting because they get cold and uncomfortable. I think that's the only way that that happens, and I really don't see that that's going to be the case. I wouldn't – it's going to be a nice talking point, but in actuality, you're not playing Houston. Like Houston, that's hot all the time. They don't have cold weather down there. You're not playing some Florida school where they've never seen 30-degree weather. Uh-huh. Texas Tech sees 30s in the winter overnight a lot.
Will the weather won't stop us on the Cycle Fanatic tailgate show.
Hell nah.
What time does it start on Saturday?
It's a 2:30 kick. That's primo, man.
11:30.
So 11:30. On Saturday on the north side of the Jacobson Building. Jeff and I will be there, I'm sure. C-Dub and Brent Bloom will stop by as well. Thanks for tuning in to CFTV Live, and we'll see you guys next week.